So I had a conversation with Nick month and a half back, and Nick actually held to the position that flat tariffs on all goods imported into the country will not cause inflation for the American consumer. I know there's other Trumps, well, I know there's other Republicans up here that have actually argued the opposite of that, such as UTSAV. I don't want to butcher the pronunciation of your name, so I'm just going to spell it. So Nick, do you still defend that position?
First of all, hey, can you hear me, by the way? Can everybody hear me?
Yes, so we can all hear you.
Yeah, we hear you. Welcome, welcome.
Hey, what's up? Hey, what's going on, everybody? Good to be with you. So the tariff debate, no, I said that they can increase prices. I said that, and if you look at Trump's first term, inflation was low, and you're right, it wasn't across the board tariffs. It was selective tariffs on countries like China. And regardless of that, prices did not go up considerably. Inflation didn't go up considerably. And that's really kind of the operative word, because whenever you're talking about economics, it always involves trade-offs, whether we're talking about corporate tax rate, tariffs, even immigration policy. It's always a trade-off. And so the question is, what is it that the country is after? And you asked a question earlier about should we trade off, for example, the short-term benefit for a long-term gain, or rather a short-term pain in exchange for a long-term benefit. And I think those are really the more interesting questions. And so, for example, something like tariffs, yeah, they can increase prices, but I think ultimately, one, I don't think it's considerable, and two, I think it's worth it in the long run, because the whole point of tariffs is about what the country produces. It's better for the country, for the United States, to produce things like semiconductors, for example, than it is for the country to produce oil. One of our biggest exports is just oil, just raw materials. It's better to make things. It's better to make and export finished products. It makes a country richer. And so you compare, for example, the United States and China, and this is something that people were looking at during the war in Ukraine. One way to look at the economy is GDP. You add up all the production in the country over the year and look at the value of that, and you can compare it that way. And I think that's actually moot because, there are different exchange rates with the currencies. And so, the purchasing power of a country like China is different than the United States. But another way to look at how you measure the size or the health of the economy is the size of its different sectors. And so during the Ukraine war, it became actually a very important question of who can produce more things, who can make more things in factories. And so when you look at a country like China, for example, it's like 70% of their economy is productive, meaning that when you add up construction, agriculture, and manufacturing, that's 70% of their economy. When you look at the United States, you add up manufacturing, construction, agriculture, that's 15% of our economy. So China's GDP might be smaller than ours, but when you compare it relative to what is actually being produced, they're actually making more than we are.
Nick, can you compare the
And
GDP growth of China compared to our own country in the last 4 years and tell me what you see?
oh, since the COVID pandemic, yeah, and I agree with you, China slowed down considerably since the
Also,
pandemic.
important to note, a lot of China's construction is complete bullshit that's just been there to prop up the economy.
Yeah, now they're like
Yeah,
trying to
but
get out of
see,
apartments and things to get out of houses
but
and things like that.
here's the thing. Here's what you got to understand. The ability to produce is what matters. China has the ability, for example, to produce warships at a much faster rate than we are, 20 times the rate that we can. China has way more shipbuilding yards than the United States have. We used to have dozens. Now I think we have three shipyards. We actually build ships. Now we're having to rely on countries like Korea, other countries to build the ships. Obviously, when we're getting into like a great power confrontation and like the international order is being tested by these other powers, that kind of capacity once again becomes relevant. How many ships you could build, tanks, ammunition, missiles, things like that. Russia, China, these other countries have much more manufacturing capability. Anyway, so all this is to say the benefit of tariffs is about making the right kinds of things. And that's worth actually the short-term pain. In the long run, again, and I'll admit that it increases prices. I don't think it increases prices significantly, but whatever the cost is, I think it's worth it because we want to make the right kinds of things. That's the real wealth of nations, is what the country makes. And I don't think we should be a petrostate that's exporting like debt and financial services and oil. That's going to make us poor in the long run. And it also, more importantly, makes us weak.
During COVID, you saw that during COVID where there was like only one company in the entirety of the U.S. that was producing masks. Because all the
Chinese.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about in the U.S. No, the rest of.
Oh yeah, it was based in Texas, right? They made a shit ton of money, but then they just shut down because it's seasonal, more or less. They can't
The problem was that during COVID, what we found out was that all the masks were being made in China, and no one was buying from the American companies because China was subsidizing the mask companies. And so there, this American manufacturer was really struggling, and only when did China put restrictions on all the equipment because of COVID did they realize that they actually needed to buy from a U.S. supplier because everything was made in China. And China actually kept a lot of things that the U.S. needed for itself because they thought it was necessary.
Yeah, I have three or four things about what Nick said that I'd like to respond to. The first thing that you said is, well, when Trump imposed his tariffs during his first term, we didn't see any great increases in the macro inflation rate. So first of all, using the macro rate of inflation as an indicator on if his tariffs were inflationary or not is a really terrible idea. Because something else that we saw introduced around the same time as his tariffs was his tax cuts. We can all agree, as long as we have a little bit of a background in economics, that tax cuts are inflationary. I mean, that's a natural byproduct. You could still make the argument that they're good. That's fine, but they're inflationary. They have inflationary pressures. Yet after the introduction of the TCJA, we still saw a decrease in that macro level of inflation. So in other words, tariffs can have inflationary pressures while not being resembled within the macro rate of inflation, and that would be described via the fact that those were isolated tariffs, as you had pointed out, Nick. Second of all, you said that you don't believe the tariffs that he wants to impose in his second administration will be considerable. So, I mean, first of all, the term considerable is going to be incredibly subjective. You get to define that however you want. What's considerable to you may not be considerable to me or Elon Musk, right? But overwhelmingly, we do have expert indications, such as the idea that the 25% flat rate tariff that he wants to impose on Canada will increase the price of a gallon of your gas by like 70 cents. I think that these are things that are incredibly considerable. And at the end of the day, if the point of his tariffs is to reindustrialize America, well, then they would have to increase the price of goods from other countries to a pretty considerable degree to do it to such an insane, to reindustrialize America as you're describing. And then for my third and final point here, you pointed out a difference between us and China that kind of sets China on a little bit of an upper leg. You said their productive capacity. I define that as their infrastructure. The reason why China can build more warships, et cetera, than the U.S. is because they have the infrastructure to do that. You describe this as their shipbuilding yards. And I think that we could cut to the chase and resolve the problem of a lack of infrastructure in the U.S. without causing these negative consequences to the American consumer through the use of investment of raw capital. Trump did it with a farm bill. Biden and Harris did it with the CHIPS and the Science Act. We can all agree that if we just invest money into building out our infrastructure for manufacturing from our federal government, A, that's a pretty damn good way to spend our money, and B, it achieves the same end goal that tariffs do without causing those same negative consequences, such as inflation for the consumer or a reduction in our own exports that cripples American companies that are predominantly reliant on exports, such as Trump's tariffs in 2018 did.
What was that phrase from the Germans that was like, a German tank is worth four American tanks, but the Americans always had five? Referring to...
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's about their productive capacity, that the Germans had higher quality stuff, but we had a bigger industrial base. And that's really the operative word is industrial base. And this just goes to show, Dean, in your ChatGPT answer, that, you know, unfortunately, people don't have actually a real understanding of what economics is.
One second.
Economics is not
sitting in the garage without a laptop.
Okay, can I finish my answer, or do you get your three-part and then interruptions on mine? So here's the problem. When we look at economics now, people talk about gross domestic product. People talk about dollars. But dollars is a fiction. That is a fiat currency. The value is always changing. What economics really is about is goods and services. It is about factors of production, labor, raw materials, capital. This is what an economy really is. China has a bigger real economy because they have the capability to make more things. They have a bigger labor force. They have immense raw materials, and they have a huge industrial base. Industrial base meaning they can make things. And so you say, for example, well, we could solve this deficit in shipbuilding capacity with basically you say something like a subsidy. You know, why don't we just get the government to fund more shipyards? And it's like, but what does that mean? The government can print money. The government cannot print shipyards. Would you like to know why? Because shipyards are built using steel. They are built using labor, skilled labor, materials that are sourced from the United States. If the United States doesn't have a large industrial base, it is not economical to build shipyards and ships. If the United States does not have a large skilled labor force, it cannot hire them economically at a shipyard. The way that you build a large industrial base is by exporting industrial goods, finished products, manufactured goods. If your goods are not competitive in the world market, then you cannot sell them there, and then therefore you cannot make them. So what makes it economical to have an industrial base are tariffs, which protect American industry and protect American workers from foreign competition, whether that's because of vast cheap labor or manipulation of currency. And so that's why you need a whole of government approach or a broad approach in the economy to foster and cultivate industry. That's the whole point. So, the point is this, if we can agree that it is desirable for the United States to make things, if we can agree it's desirable for the United States to be powerful and have an industrial base, well, then it's a necessity. And so, things will probably be more expensive. And you say, well, the word considerable is doing a lot of heavy lifting. That's very subjective. True. But I said it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, because what is imperative for the United States to maintain primacy and project strength is a strong industrial base, because power and economics, you know, the problem with you guys,
do you mind if I respond,
it's like
real
the
quick?
Hold on. Yeah, hang on. Let me just say this, then you can respond. The problem with you kids, you youngsters, nephew, is it's these ChatGPT answers you're racing. You're not even listening to what I'm saying. You're just ready to launch in with the next talking point.
Nick, don't worry. I'm on a very real note.
Because you never read Friedrich List, okay? Because you don't know about the American system. But go ahead. Give me the ChatGPT Biden talking points on
Nick,
that.
Before that, I have a question. So based on what I've just seen, based on what I've seen from you, I think you're somewhat anti-immigration. So
yeah, I was actually going to ask about that.
Hold on, wait. So as someone that's worked in manufacturing, Adrian Orr has also worked in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. I know that you can't just say, let's start manufacturing this thing and be competitive on a worldwide scale. That's going to result in you making worse products if you don't have the experience.
It's literally impossible.
Like, it's literally impossible in some cases.
Which is why I find your views somewhat contradictory.
Especially
at odds with what
especially,
you know, right? Like, I mean,
hold on,
everything
Ian,
you just said,
Ian,
I agree
on,
with.
Hold on, Ian, wait. So, especially with something like chips that depends on experience from the previous generations, right? So that one especially. So if America's already 20, 30 years behind on manufacturing, you would need to bring in some amount of immigration from those people to at minimum
for things that are more simple, train them and then leave. But for some products, you would need someone that's already had 20, 30 years of experience to permanently immigrate to make sure the process actually runs smoothly. So how exactly do you think that would work?
Yeah, and then after he responds to that, I just want to be able to hop in and respond so I don't forget what he said to me.
Yeah, that's a good question. Here's the thing about immigration. I actually don't have a problem with what you're describing, because what you are describing is actually an immigration, or maybe better said, a work visa program. But that's not what we have. We have brought in 60 million immigrants in like 40 years. And I know you guys are most likely against illegal immigration. Great. And I imagine you think they should be deported. And I agree with you on that. And I imagine you would probably agree that we should maybe offset, if we could bring in more skilled workers, we could diminish other forms of immigration, like chain migration or something like that. And I'd agree. The problem is none of that is happening. The illegals are not being deported. As a matter of fact, they're being let in. That is true. Trump.
We have higher deportation numbers last year under Biden than there were under Donald Trump.
And then at some point,
so obviously deportation is happening.
I'm talking about, well, first of all, you had 10 million illegals come in under Biden in 4 years. So it's a drop in the bucket.
Can we talk about that next? So I can
That's also not true. The majority of people who have come in recent years are through asylum, which is a legal process, making them legal.
It's abuse. They're abusing the asylum
process. Yeah, so I totally agree that they're abusing the process, but that's exactly why Biden proposed reforming the process and reforming asylum laws to make it harder to claim asylum, but Donald Trump killed the bill, so that didn't happen.
Okay. Donald Trump had them remain in Mexico, and Biden terminated that policy.
Remain in Mexico only affected around 70,000 people and wasn't even in use by the end of Donald Trump's administration.
That's just not true.
So, wait,
that is objectively true.
Was
wrapped up in
not true. So, okay. So, Nick, I would like to know what type of immigration policy you want. Do you want like a complete?
But wait, Nick should answer Dean's question right there. That's incredibly relevant.
Which is what?
In what year was the Remain in Mexico policy passed under Trump's admin? Then also, you said a whole
2019.
Lot. Perfect, right? So when Harry says that it wasn't put into effect until after the end of his presidency, he's telling the truth. Not to mention, Mexico said they wouldn't renew it. It was a humanitarian crisis, and there's other means that we could use to expedite the legal processes of migration to disincentivize immigrants from entering into the country through illegal routes in the first place. There's also a whole
lot. Here's the problem.
One moment. Don't interrupt me. Just please, 30 seconds. There's also a whole lot that you had said to me about like tariffs and how we could reindustrialize America. At some point, I'd love to respond to you about that, but if the overwhelming consensus would like this conversation to head in the direction of immigration, I could kind of just let it slide.
Yeah. Oh, you'll let it slide? Thank you so much. Well, look, with regard to immigration, I'm not going to defend Trump or Biden or anybody on illegal immigration. The border's wide open. And look, I mean, we could go back and forth about the particulars. No, look, I didn't vote for Trump. I don't know if you know anything about
Fine. I'm not asking who you voted for, but when you say the border's wide open, that's just stupid.
Yeah, it's just rhetoric.
That is just true. That is
really, really, Nick, how is the border wide open?
Because
what did Biden do to open?
Because we have a catch and release policy.
So was the border wide open under Trump prior to 2019?
Wait. Can we just finish this point? Here's why the border's wide open, because we have a catch and release policy.
So can
you respond to what Dean just said to you?
Which is what?
Was the border wide open under the entirety of
Trump's admin? Yes, it was. And I was critical of Trump throughout his first term.
So say Trump had an open border throughout the entirety of his first term.
Yes, he did. And
so Title 42 didn't close the border?
Say it.
So Title 42 didn't close the border?
The pandemic made people not show up. That's true.
I think.
That's just true.
Guys,
if you look at that chart. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, Harry and Dean, I don't know why you guys are laughing. Because Nick has been Nick has always been had this viewpoint that the they're already letting in way too many people.
But
even when they
but wait, his viewpoint
restricted.
He just debunked his own viewpoint. He was saying that the border was closed in its entirety under Donald Trump, and then acknowledged that Title 42 made it not the case. It's like
yeah, and then also that's why
he literally just said.
He literally said that he wanted Trump to be stricter on the border, and that
Trump to be stricter on the border is different from the claim that the border is wide open. I think it is incredibly idiotic to say that the president
was wide open under Trump.
Yes, he said that the border was wide open under the entirety of Trump's 4 years, and that is an incredibly idiotic claim to make, including the years under Trump's administration under Title 42. You could say that he wasn't strict enough on the border. I completely expect that from you, Nick. But to say that it was
I can give you the entire history of Trump's first term on immigration. You don't want to go there with me. I covered it every day. Look, whippersnapper, I'm older than you, okay? I did my show every day for 4 years under Trump. And here was the pattern. When Trump was inaugurated, illegal immigration had fallen from Obama's final year. It fell actually after the election and through the inauguration because there's always this effect. Whenever illegals anticipate that there will be enforcement, they don't show up. When they think that they will get a chance at an amnesty, they show up in larger numbers. So illegals were showing up in lower numbers in 2017 because they anticipated that Trump, elected on building the wall, would be enforcing. In September 2017, Trump floated this DACA amnesty. He said he wanted a grand bargain. He would amnesty the DACA recipients. Then you started getting caravans. And they were coming from the Northern Triangle, which is Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador. They started coming in like spring and then the fall 2018. It culminated in 2019 to 20-year high illegal immigration. May and June, at 150,000 illegal border crossings each month. That is when Trump threatened tariffs on Mexico and got a commitment from Mexico that they would close their southern border to the Northern Triangle, and that they could keep the illegals on the other side of the border. And if you look at the numbers, the border apprehensions did come down considerably after that. I agree with you. It was very late in the game. That was in 2019. And then it cratered in March 2020 because of Title 42, or you could say just because of the pandemic. I mean, there's really two reasons. One, you had Title 42, but also global movement was frozen because of the pandemic, because of quarantine and things like that. So, but it came up shortly after that. Illegal immigration actually came down in March, crashed to lowest level in history, and then it came up before Biden took office. And then it exploded under Biden. I don't know why you want to dispute that. That's just obviously true.
So how could you possibly hold to the position?
The border crossings under Biden were unbelievable. And
how
could
you possibly hold
to
the position that the border was wide open under Title 42 while also acknowledging that Title 42 may have slowed immigration into our country?
When I say throughout the entirety, it was closed for 3 months.
Okay,
Trump had a wide
open
border from January
27th.
Okay, congratulations. Yes, when I said throughout his entire, I meant 90% of it. You got me. Gotcha! Yeah, no, but that's always been my position. That's why I didn't vote for Trump. But look, regardless, we're getting caught in the weeds on this. Will you admit Republicans suck? Dude. Republicans and Democrats are corrupt.
I'm familiar with you.
You're shilling for the Democrats. It's crazy.
I won't take that route anymore.
Democrat presidents are good and Republican presidents are bad. It's just such a juvenile mentality. But anyway,
that's not my mentality.
But here's the big picture.
Is that Democrat presidents in modern American history have seemingly been better than Republican ones, especially comparing the administrations of Biden and Harris.
So naive. Dude, Democrats are just as bad. Democrats and Republicans are equally bad.
I absolutely reject that.
Neither of them give a shit about you.
The reason why
all politics are bastards.
All right, here's a suggestion. Basically, you don't let in anyone through the border. You can only do it if you do through the flights.
I just think the numbers need to be way lower. The problem is the volume is insane. We have this 50 million foreign-born people living here. It's just too many. That's not immigration. That's too many. Immigration is like you said, a country decides to permit people to enter because it makes the country stronger. If we had Taiwanese engineers come in to teach American workers how to build semiconductors and build an ecosystem where we could make those, that's a clear benefit for America. And if we bring them in and then we send them home when they're done, or we bring in, Elon said, the 10,000 geniuses. I don't think anyone would have a problem with that. But the problem is we're getting millions of irregular migration, which you could say Well, technically, they're asylum seekers. It's like, okay, they're showing up at the border, they're reading a script, and they're being brought here. They're basically economic migrants. And then you have other people that are gaming the system, or they're, you know, paid their way through oligarchs, or there's some lottery or chain migration system. And the problem is, like, it's just too many people coming in, and a lot of them are not benefiting the country. They don't have loyalty. They don't identify with the country. And there's just too many for too long. So okay. That's really okay. My hang-up.
So in your view, what is an ideal immigration policy that results in people actually becoming citizens? Would it be the Taiwanese? Would it be the EB-5? Would it be the O-1? What is your viewpoint of that?
I think you need to overhaul the system. And I think the government needs to evaluate where we actually need the skilled labor. And so I think that would be semiconductors. I think that would be anything tech related. And I think that at the same time, though, the corollary is you need to develop American industry and education. It can't just be about importing, because the problem is you bring in these people and you give them green cards, you know, like that Sriram Krishnam guy, who he was the appointment that started the whole thing. He got a green card after like 10 years. He came here from Microsoft from India in like, what, 2006? And he got citizenship by 2016. And so this is just importing like a cheap labor force, because of course these people would rather be here than India.
Hold on, Sriram had a lot of
Hold on, wait. 10 years at Microsoft, bro. Yeah, sure. You couldn't even last a year at Microsoft.
Yeah, Sriram.
Just to be honest. Hold on,
yeah, Sriram had a lot of accomplishments. He helped Snapchat get to a $1 billion valuation. He helped Microsoft. He was a big deal at Facebook. So it's not just cheap Indian labor. He actually had a lot of impact.
Yeah, Nick, there's going to come a time when you will have to apologize to the Indian community for your hatred. There will come a time. And you will laugh.
What hatred? What hatred?
Your hatred, where you say 500 million Indians will come to this country. H-1B program takes 85,000 max. In FY 2022,
that's per year.
Per year. FY 2022, this program had 73% Indians. FY 2023 had 50% Indians. For the last 10 years of the H-1B program, yes, the Indians had a bit of a majority, but not for the entirety of this program. The idea that 500 million Indians are going to come to this country is fake news. You spread hate. You spread disinformation. You're not a good faith actor.
Oh, brother.
And don't call me a brother. You're not my freaking brother. I'm going to call you out. I'm going to call you out. I'm going to expose your disinformation. And I'm glad you cry when you are, oh, my check mark.
That wasn't him. That wasn't him.
I never had a check mark.
Honestly, yeah, brother, honestly, man, I eat your tears. It's delicious.
My dude, that's not
I don't know. You're the one who sounds emotional.
Utsav, please don't.
I think we can be objective about stuff.
Yeah, please don't do that. Please don't do
this guy.
Andrew?
Yeah, how's it going? Well, I just saw that it was quite lopsided up here, where it was a 4-on-1 against Fuentes, and I thought maybe I could come in and even the odds a bit.
Yeah, thank you. Well, yeah, I like you, Andrew. You're a good guy. But I want to respond to this. So let me just say this, okay? Obviously, when I say 500 million Indians are coming in, that's what we here in America would call a hyperbole. It's an exaggeration. You might not be familiar. I don't know your culture very well, but it's an exaggeration. Obviously, it's not 500 million.
It's called a lie.
Oh, thank you for telling me. Here's the point.
No, he's just
though.
Exaggerating, guy. Like, don't take it too seriously. Like, he does this, and I think a lot of people do. So yeah. Like, don't take it literally. Yeah.
Yeah. It's called hyperbole.
He is holding his own pretty fucking well.
It's called hatred.
Utsav, please don't take it too seriously.
It's kind of cringy. I mean, to defend him here, right? I think that two things could be true at once. I think it could be true that it's hyperbole, while also denoting the fact that it's hyperbole that's being used to like literally generate like hate. Like, I mean, like you have to make that realization, right? Like the reason why Nick gets on stream and talks about millions and millions and millions of Indians coming into our country through H-1B visas to work here is to literally like scare prejudiced white supremacists into thinking that the white race is dying and white people are going to become minority.
Oh, by the way, did you see?
Yeah, this is why he pushes like replacement theory and shit. He wants to scare his viewers. Just shut up. He pushes replacement theory to make his viewers.
By the way, No.
Wait. I'm sorry. Nick.
Holy shit. Hold on. Okay, just to clarify.
That just got way out of control. This is fucking Chernobyl down here. Holy shit.
Just to clarify, a few days ago, we literally made fun of those people.
Exactly.
Right. We
Well, I'm
I don't know if you guys saw that, but we literally
make fun of who?
We made fun of a bunch of white supremacists on space.
Okay, yeah, good. Yeah. You should make fun of people like Nick.
3 days doing
I will
it.
Say, I will say, okay, you, here, you, here's the thing. I will say, statistically speaking, for various many countries in Europe specifically, the birth rates are so fucking low that the people who are migrating into that country will inevitably replace them because they are simply going to outbreed the people that are there. Now,
correct.
The replacement theory, by the way, there's a distinction. Replacement theory is this correct. Thing that people say this is somehow a planned thing, right? This is somehow a thing that has been put into place by the elites or some fucking bullshit. I don't believe in that. However, I will say that
because
ignoring
the amount of children
is...
But you're right, there's
a distinction.
Also decreases.
There's a distinction. Nick,
destiny, guys.
There's a distinction.
I'm not referring
Nick,
to the
Nick pushes replacement theory as what Dean was talking about to scare
his
viewers.
I know.
It's replacement theory. Yeah,
but I just wanted to clarify, like additional context. Maybe
I've had it myself.
Yeah.
Less is better. Less is better from you, actually.
Let me respond. Harry,
yeah, that was fun, guys. Lynn was fun.
Let me respond to this allegation.
All right.
You know, here's Jesus the problem Christ. Is all of this language is just, it's not rational, okay? You're not using actually, you know, when I say what's hateful, you used an example of where I said a hyperbolic statement. I said, well, it's 500 million when in reality it's 85,000 per year and they were 50%. Okay, but you know, it's actually not a hateful, racist, white supremacist.
Hold on.
Can
this
I,
is
can
so
I
disingenuous.
Get my point out?
No, this is so disingenuous.
Hold on.
This is, wait, this is,
hold
wait,
on.
Wait, this is
Dude,
so
calm
disingenuous.
Down, hold on.
All right, everybody
let,
show
net,
up.
Let fuck. I can't speak. Let Nick make his fucking point.
Yes, please. And uninterrupted if possible. I mean, fucking uninterrupted. 100%. That's a demand.
All right, Nick, you can go ahead.
Thank you. And I'll try to keep it brief, but here's the point. It's actually and this is all I'm going to say. You can feel however you want about me or things I've said. It is actually a valid concern what the composition of the country will be, racially, ethnically, in terms of religion. When you talk about the stability and the health and the identity and the character of a nation, it is relevant what the composition of the country is. And there have been studies done on this that show that the more ethnic diversity there is in a country, the more conflict there is. And that's a very basic premise, which is that people living together with lots of exposure, with a lot of differences about deeply held things. I mean, look at, for example, Israel and Palestine. Look at a country like Syria or Iraq or India and Pakistan or Pakistan and Afghanistan or the Chechen War. I mean, Kosovo, like everywhere where you have, and it goes without saying, where there is sectarian, religious, ethnic conflict, just because you have sectarian, religious, ethnic diversity. And America has undergone a radical transformation. The composition of the country is different. It used to be one way. Now it's a different way. There used to be one kind of people living here. Now there's a different kind of people living here. The outcomes are going to be different. And I actually don't think it's necessarily hateful to be concerned about that, to talk about it honestly as adults, to be critical about that. And so, you know, and it's important to distinguish between, you know, when we're being funny or when we're being hyperbolic, when we're making a point, and then saying, well, you know, is it actually worthwhile to consider that America was a European country from, you know, the time they settled at Plymouth Rock before there even was a United States until the Hart-Celler Immigration Act or the 1990 Immigration Act. And now it's going to become a majority minority country. and what kind of political cleavages will result, ethnic politics, the question of assimilation, American identity. You know, even liberals are preoccupied with this question. There's a book by Sam Huntington called Who Are We? And it says that, you know, when you look at American identity, it started out with a racial, ethnic, religious, cultural, and civic identity. Over the course of 300 years, it no longer has an ethnic identity because you have Southern and Eastern Europeans. It no longer has a religious identity because you have Catholics, Protestants, Jews, and other groups. No longer has a cultural identity because people are speaking different languages and practicing different religions. So it's like, is the only thing that makes us American now that we have a constitution and like get traffic tickets or something like that? Can a country hang together if that's all that's left? That's a valid question. That's actually not necessarily motivated in racial hatred or prejudice. I actually don't hate people. I'm a Catholic. I know real white supremacists, Nazis, whatever, in the so-called radical right, they don't like me. They don't like Christianity. They don't like that I'm a Catholic. They don't like those things. I'm rambling. But that's what I have to say about that.
Well, here's my question to you. If you really
is someone talking, I can't hear.
He's talking to
Jordan.
To reconnect.
Jordan. You can't hear me?
I can't hear Jordan.
Jordan, you got to drop.
Yeah, Jordan. Yeah, drop. I'll bring you back.
Okay. While Jordan's dropping,
I'd just like to respond to that because Nick, those are a bunch of gish gallops you just threw out there. The fact is, we've had monocultures like Japan and Korea go at war with each other. We've had the whole history of Europe with the Christian Reformation disputes between Protestants and Catholics. We've had a lot of differences. Heck, America is becoming more Catholic now, and this country was founded by Protestants, Calvinists. So the reality is countries have dealt with things with different groups, sometimes with the same set of groups, sometimes with the same set of races. The Indian community is one of the lowest crime-committing communities in this country, one of the highest net earners of this country. And you are on record for slandering the Hindu religion. You're on record for making fun of these Indians based on their hygiene, based on their intelligence, based on their ethnic composition. You've done this many times. I don't have to send you the receipts. It's all there. You're being completely disingenuous, and we're not taking this crap anymore. It's over. The Indian community will never be your punching bag again. Mark my words.
And then also,
Hang on.
I want to jump in for a second here. Okay, so they're both good points made on both sides here. I'll say that to a certain extent. Now, when it comes to what Nick was saying, to be concerned and to talk about it, that's fine. Okay, that's fine. I think if you go to a certain country, you should respect that country's culture because there is a reason why you're going to that country, right? So technically speaking, what I see a lot with many people, there's an issue when they immigrate from one country to another. They're actually not really respecting the culture of the country to which they immigrate, and then that causes a bit of a problem, right? Because you know you are going to that country for a reason, and you're going to that country for the reason that it is the way it is, and it is the way it is because of certain factors, right? So I'd say that you know decent assimilation from that perspective to the people that are immigrating in, like you know the people that are immigrating in, they have to assimilate to where they're going. That is good. Okay, that is something we should talk about. I think that's something that is you know an argument of merit. However, if you want to discuss this and if you want to criticize this and what is happening at current is I think a bit of a you know the inverse of that, then you cannot say the stuff like what has been said on Spaces multiple times already. Okay, you know, and some of those dumbass fucking memes about street shitting and whatever, that's just fucking insane and that's just stupid and annoying. It makes everybody who does this look extremely fucking stupid. Like if you want to look absolutely fucking brainless, then you spread this kind of shit. Because if you have an argument, you can sound very reasonable in doing so, right? I think Utsef can agree here. There's like literally no hate here. And I am actually bringing across the point that Nicholas here is trying to say. Nick, sorry. Like you can be logical about it or you can be racist about it. It goes either way. And I've seen a lot of stuff that I'm very disappointed in. And I don't want to ever fucking see that shit again. Because it's not fair. Okay? And because look at this. If you really want them to assimilate the culture that you want them to assimilate, then why would you make those specific people pissed off at you? Why would you do that? If you're supposedly representing a very specific set of values, then why exactly would you make these people pissed off at you? Because then they would be pissed off by those values specifically because they associate them with you. So that's a bit of a problem. I will criticize that as well, right? I think we're all on the same page right now.
Yeah, I mean, like, my own personal issue with Nick is it's not that he's dumb. In fact, he's very well-spoken, very intelligent. The problem is he trolls too much, right? And it doesn't help the conversation. It doesn't help move the needle forward, right? I mean, or push it in the direction that it should be going. That is the only issue, right?
Yeah.
Seriously.
It's too much
it's not him so much as his fucking followers, right? His followers, some of them, they listen to him because not because he's smart, not because he has something intelligent to say, but because they just want to troll people, and that doesn't help.
And
but how's that any different? Like that's no different than Dean's followers. That's no different. Hang on. Just wait a second. Let me make the case. Okay, it's no different. There's no distinction here when you say okay. Some of these guys' followers follow him because they want to troll. It's like you can say that about everybody. You can say that about any major personality who exists.
Let me jump in here. There is an exception to this. Okay. Specifically, what I have seen from the Groypers was mass harassment on people for no fucking reason. And literally, it was. Okay. There's one person specifically that these people targeted and tried to bully into censoring themselves and to an extent even succeeded. Okay. Which, by the way, is going to lead to another point, because I don't want to hear any of these people ever complain about censorship again, because getting this many views on posts and literally trying to get other people to censor themselves is literally peak fucking irony, okay? And to say that people troll each other, yes, trolling is fine. To say some dumb shit about each other, that's fine, okay? People are going to do that. Is it something that should be done? No. Are they going to do it anyways? Yes. But pressuring people and mass harassing them, that's what I have a problem with. That's not fucking okay. It doesn't matter whose fucking side that comes from. I don't give a slightest of a shit. I will call it out in either fucking direction. I don't care, because that shit's unacceptable. This goes for the right and the left as well.
And then also, I just wanted to briefly respond to what Andrew said.
But
sorry for the double mute. It's a basic glitch.
Dean died.
Wait, really?
Fuck. I'm back. Just 10 seconds to kind of respond to a point Andrew made about how maybe the fan base of a lot of larger like creators and influencers and like the politosphere can be chopped up towards wanting entertainment or like satirical nonsense. Well, I guess the difference between people like Nick, me, Harry, etc., is I've like never seen a clip on my feed of Nick making a good point supported by evidence inside of an intellectual conversation get thousands of likes. Every single time I see this guy, it's like an edit of him screaming the N-word and then like going into like Nazi Germany and then like I love Hitler at the end, right? And top of that, it is never something to do with, as I already noted, an intellectual point. Even in this conversation that we've had so far, you chopped a difference between 85,000 individuals to 500 million individuals is just satirical hyperbole. Like, people don't look to you for news. People don't look to you to learn. People look to you because they feel excluded from the general broader society, and you're the only place for these introverted, quote-unquote oppressed white men to go to feel special, right? It's not because they're learning from you.
Well, Nick, I want you to know. Hold on one second, Harry. One second, Nick, I want you to know that I'm an oppressed white guy as well. All right, now I'm here to save the white race with me.
Jordan here is black, by the
way. My nigga,
Jordan here.
I mean, look right there, right? Like nobody. Here's the difference between it's gross, it's just fucking gross. Like he laughs. It's just fucking gross. Like brother. Here's the difference between my just shut the fuck up, Nick. Please. Like, the less from you is better.
Really good troll here.
The less from you is better.
Oh,
listen, the difference.
That's not.
Wait, you guys, you can't be like, come on, when he says the N word, and I tell him to shut the fuck up.
Yeah,
right.
No,
like I'm totally, not I'm absolutely
that,
correct
not about that. But like you can't tell people not to talk when they're on stage. Don't tell people not to talk when they're on stage.
When he's saying the N word.
Jordan, what Jordan was egging him on a little bit there. Yes. Can Jordan say your piece real quick?
Yeah.
Sorry, the fucking mute button.
Okay,
Jordan, what did you intend with that? Were you expecting that to happen?
Dude, this actually just proves my point. I went on like a whole little like 30-second talk about how Nick doesn't educate, Nick doesn't inform. Nick is only for this satirical fucking regressive bullshit, and then his response is to ignore it all and throw out a racial slur. It's abominable. It's gross.
Yeah.
Harry.
Are any of you familiar with how Chernobyl kind of melted down? Because this is what I'm seeing right now. I have the control rods. We're putting it into the nuclear material. The piece is coming in. It's all nice. But the moment that we're lifting it up a little bit, the fucking graphite rods start to burn, and we're having a massive fucking meltdown. And now I'm on the fucking coal line with God saying, hey, can I get another try at this? And so I'm putting it all back together again. That's the mute button right now. Okay. So anyways, I'd like to go with Jordan. Nobody fucking talk. Jordan talks now. He's going to answer a question that we have for him. And then Nick is going to answer that question that is going to come as an answer from... Jordan, go ahead. Did you believe that with what you just said, or what you said beforehand, that was going to egg on Nick to say the hard RN word?
I mean, I don't care. Nick knows that I said that joke in good faith. Like, it was meant to be funny. Like, it was genuinely meant to just be like, hey, guess what? Like, I'll help you save the white race, since white people won't help you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, fuck, I'll marry a white woman. Fuck, man. Like, Jesus Christ.
Never ask a white supremacist. Never ask a white supremacist the race of his girlfriend.
Yeah, definitely black.
Okay, so another thing I want to ask, Jordan, were you offended by him saying the N-word?
No, because like I know if I go to like Nick and I like drop a joke in his DMs or something, and it's like a racial joke, he's not going to take offense to it. Like, it's not like... Also, Nick's not like the whole problem with race is the fact that like people like Harry and Dean jumped in front of me before I even got to jump in front of myself. Like, I already knew it was a joke when he said it. I'm not gonna fight Nick over the fact that I'm like, oh well, I'm gonna fucking fight race. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I know damn well if I'm drinking at a bar, a dude swings on me, Nick's gonna be like, all right, dude, you want to just knock this guy out or what? Like, that's what's gonna happen. Like, I already know that. It's not that type of situation. It's just like when you make that type of joke, like, expect like that type of response. Like, I would expect nothing less, to be honest with you. Now in other situations, I'm not gonna bring Nick to the hood and then say that joke and then he drops that shit. I'm like, Nick, you on your own. But in any other situation, I mean, like, it's just whatever. Like, it's funny to me.
But do you not recognize whatever. What you just said? Like, you wouldn't bring Nick to the quote unquote hood because he would say something offensive, and a lot of people would take offense to that.
No, I'm saying I wouldn't bring him to the hood and then say, let's save the white race. Like, that's crazy work. Like, I wouldn't do that.
Then also, just like, the
idea, that's
like,
what I'm saying.
Seriously.
The idea of like chopping it up to a joke, just being like, oh, funny, haha, not offended. It's just a joke. That's crazy.
I mean,
that's
like
people
joke,
like to put yeah, it's just, like, listen, by making him say shit.
But, it's gross, yeah, right? Like, it's gross. Like,
just 35, just 30 seconds here.
Sure.
Like, this idea of trying to sensationalize like this blatantly fucking racist white guy throwing around the N-word, calling it a joke. It's morally abominable. Like, imagine you had a 10-year-old daughter, some guy that you chopped it up with once or twice, really sensational, genuine dude, walks up to you and says, damn, your 10-year-old daughter's hot as shit. I can't wait to bang her the day she's legal. And, like, what are you going to do? Like, oh my God, that was such a joke. Like,
that's not even the same thing.
What? Wait, yeah, just for the record, that's what fucking Donald Trump said, by the way. Dean just fucking quoted Donald Trump, and you're all going, oh, what? That's so gross. Yeah, you fucking voted for it. Y'all don't know
didn't.
That Donald Trump.
I didn't.
Yeah, wait, hold on now. Y'all don't know that Donald Trump told a 10-year-old girl that he wants to date her?
You're trying to drag out one kind of oppression to compare it to another kind of oppression. You kind of show how little you actually give a shit about both. So maybe just don't.
Bingo.
Wait, who is that in response to?
Everything, literally everything. All right, let's fucking move on. Homath, what's up?
Hey,
I don't know what the fuck to do with any of this shit.
It's been everywhere for sure.
This conversation is, it needs a moderator and it needs a structure because everyone's talking past each other. No one's getting really a point or a moment to make, No one's getting a moment to make a point about what their values are, what they're seeing, how that's making them feel. You know, we're all just arguing about, like, the last few comments were just like, you can't compare one kind of oppression to another kind of oppression. It's just, I could vomit blood down the front of my shirt if I hear that shit one more time. It's the rhetoric that it's so stale. It's so, like, there's just a certain map of lines that you can't cross, and if you do, everyone gets to call you a bad guy. I care so much less about that than I care about listening to people say, well, hey, these changes are affecting me in this way and I don't want it. What's the point in calling someone a name when they have something like that to say?
I think it's incredibly important to call out people in society like Nick Fuentes who say disgusting things like the N-word.
Yes, I know you think that's important.
What is this?
No, hold on. We weren't saying that Jordan's a victim here. We were just saying that generally Nick shouldn't be saying that, and we shouldn't be embracing people who use language like that. It had nothing to do with Jordan asking that question.
I want to be the victim. It's okay.
I'm so finished.
Look,
I will say, I think it's kind of ridiculous that there is a lot of people getting offended over words.
Yeah.
Yeah, you shouldn't be offended by words.
It's a huge waste of airtime.
Oh my, guys, there are words that offend you guys every single day, whether it be someone personal to you using certain words that offend you, it could be anything, right? Words have meaning for a reason. So obviously words can be hurtful.
Harry Dean, I want to tell you something. I have literally been called every single fucking slur that you can imagine that can be associated with anyone that has the shade of white.
If you shouldn't get offended by words,
Adrian, hold on. For example, like,
if you shouldn't get offended,
I think that's
by words,
fucking
how come
funny.
Everybody right. on so the panel got offended hold by on. Relation hold to on. The idea of hitting on a kid. Weren't those just words? I think we could all recognize it. Yeah, sometimes it is okay to be offended by words, especially words that perpetuate harm.
And by the way, when I told Nick to shut the fuck up earlier, everybody got up in arms. Those are still words, right? Words can be offensive. And Adrian, I totally acknowledge that you've taken like a lot of shit from a lot of people, no doubt. But it's not necessarily that like words just generally in their use can be offensive, but certain words in certain circumstances absolutely can be offensive. So for example, if a loved one came to you and said something like picked on an insecurity you've been open with them about or something like that, right? You would probably be offended.
Isn't the words that matters more than the words themselves? Because,
exactly.
You know,
I think it's both.
Nicholas didn't intend to hurt Jordan, right? There was no intention
exactly,
of hurting him.
Exactly.
I think it's both, right? It's both.
And then, to add on a little bit further,
also,
it's not like the grammatical structure of the N-word that
also,
pisses me
how
off.
Much of a
it's how the word has been used to dehumanize people.
Also,
it's how the word has been used to perpetuate real harm.
He wasn't using it as a dehumanizing factor.
It's how the word is used to perpetuate harm today, right? It's about the impact of the word. It's about the intention behind the word.
Dean, it's okay. I sleep with white women, bro. It's okay, bro. Holy shit, dude.
All right. Also, I don't think you should like. I don't think anyone should be enough of a bitch to get like upset,
worked up
about
yeah, no,
a quote unquote insecurity. Oh my god, my nose is too big.
Wait, so like, are you guys perfectly okay with like Dean and I just like being incredibly offensive toward everybody on this panel and start telling everybody to shut the fuck up?
I mean,
like,
I'm gonna have to mute
you. I mean, you can call me the hard R.
I'm just telling because like I just
no,
find it ironic.
Okay. Call me the hard R.
No, I find it ironic how earlier again I told Nick to shut up and also shut the fuck up and people got upset. Like,
no,
wow,
who,
it's becoming like so heated in here. Like, it's terrible.
Who got upset?
Hold on. Let's clear this up.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Okay. We weren't upset. We weren't offended, right? You can say all of those things, right? We don't mind. right? Also, I'm not white, and you know, I've been called slurs as well. I don't give a shit. But right, we're trying to keep this space somewhat productive, so even though those things wouldn't bother us, it is still getting in the way of having a productive space.
Yeah. And I think the look, here's the thing. Here's the
wait, I'm sorry. Thing. Wait, hold on.
No. Here's another thing.
Dropping
another
the N-word is productive?
Here's another thing. No, we never said that. Here's another thing. You can all eviscerate fucking... Actually, no, that's the wrong terminology. That's actually not correct. You can all debunk or have your criticisms of Nick Fuentes in the comment sections of this space and various other places. We don't really want to harp on this as much as possible. Now, I don't think he should have said that word, but it doesn't matter. He said it. That's his responsibility to bear. And whatever fucking criticisms you have on that, you can leave that to the comment section. We cannot inundate the whole conversation with how you would like to express your disapproval of it, right? I think everybody understands what the disapproval is because it's literally a fucking blanketed term, and it's so annoying. It's over and over the same thing. It sounds like an LLM is out spitting it out, except that it's not even like that because it is always the same thing, not something different. It would be exciting if it was a different thing, but realistically speaking, it's always the same fucking thing. So it makes it worse than something that an LLM would spit out. That's why it pisses me off so much. Okay, so let's kind of return to a little bit of order, and let's try not to be fucking. I don't care.
Yeah.
No more virtue signaling. Yeah, this is virtue signaling. I'm sorry. This is virtue signaling.
Okay.
No,
I'm gonna keep a level head. This will be it for me on this, and you know, then I'll probably go to bed. And this all actually right. could play into a productive conversation. There's something that you just said that I, you know, kind of agree with. You said, well, we shouldn't be able to use like the N word in the space as it impedes upon the productivity of the conversation. So, like, in other words, we shouldn't say things that produce suboptimal outcomes or negative outcomes. And that's, like, my exact argument for why I don't think that word should be used at all by white people in society. And, I mean, I'll just kind of leave it at that.
Yeah, but why should it be used by black people then? It's either everyone gets to say it or no one gets to say it.
And who are you as a white dude to decide anything, to be honest?
Yeah, I don't want to oppress other people just because a word oppresses me. That's like an eye for an eye makes us all blind. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't also, understand some, why people something, put so much power, you know, give so much power to the word. It just
yeah, if anything, bad. you remember the word cunt, right?
Yeah, I remember that. You're not supposed to say
so
that.
So I lived in a lot of English speaking countries before. Like I was in the UK for quite a while, and people say the cunt pretty often. But you come to America, and people are so offended by the word cunt. Right? But in the UK, it doesn't really have any impact. Why is that? It's because people say it so frequently that it loses all meaning. Cunt, 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 cunt. You say it here, people lose their mind. They're like, how dare you say the C word? Blah, blah, blah. It's because the word is said, if it's because the word has the taboo that gives it so much power. So if you
literally with fucking the Australians, they have the same thing. You know, when they want to compliment someone, cunt. They literally say the words "good cunt."
Yeah,
no fucking way. It's like insane.
Why are we having a meta conversation anyway? Can't we get back to the topic?
Conversations on language are important.
Yeah, I'm gonna
unstructured conversations always devolve into tone policing.
Harry, I'll see you around, Harry. I'm gonna go to drop for the night, y'all.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you. Sleep well, man.
Sleep well.
Yeah, sleep well.
God bless you.
God darn it.
Wait, yeah, let me jump in here if I
want to beef with him.
Yeah, any white supremacists in the chat want to call me the hard R? I'm feeling
I really don't think so.
You don't want this kind of replies under my spaces, man. Come on. All right. I mean, I understand it's only good faith and whatnot. You're kind of asking for it, but come on, man.
Anyway, let's
I think
on.
Nick wanted to say something, so I mean, let him
go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in. I mean, look, obviously, Jay or Jordan made a joke and said, "Oh, I'll help you save the white race," and I said, "Oh my God, it's a joke." And you know, the thing is, like, and same goes by the way for the Indian stuff earlier. I think it is important to not get so caught up in the tone policing. Like, one big development that I actually 100% support Elon on is getting rid of the woke stuff. Like, I, you know, obviously I've been a little critical of Elon over some things lately, but the one net positive I absolutely support about Elon and Trump is undoing the political correctness that gets in the way. And like, here's a perfect example where we're actually talking about a super important issue, which is immigration. Whatever side you take on immigration, it's globally transformative. And people don't talk enough about this. It's a global phenomenon. And they're calling it, it's actually a distinct, what they call a demographic transition in the history of mankind, which is the global south migrating to the global north. And you see this, of course, in Europe. You see this in the United States. You see this in Australia. And it's changing everything. And obviously, it's having an impact on the politics of all of Europe with the rise of AfD, with what's happening in the United Kingdom, the riots over the summer, the rise of Donald Trump. Even Trudeau is talking about kicking out some of the people whose visas expired. It's a very important issue. It's going to be determinative for the future of all these countries. And how this whole thing started was I was being called a racist, white supremacist, etc. And all I said was, look, treating this subject seriously or taking the propositionally negative position does not make you a racist, doesn't make you a hateful person. In other words, you can say, I oppose this global demographic transition for some reason other than racial hatred, for some reason other than prejudice. And then we got into the weeds for 20 minutes about such an obvious rage bait like joke. And so the one thing that I do actually agree with the effective accelerationists, the Elon crowd, is that they are oriented around solutions because the country is really messed up. We're clearly in decline in many ways. And the only way if we have a chance at solving them is if we get serious about stuff that matters, like industrial policy and tariffs, like immigration restriction, et cetera, and not be hung up on. I mean, the stuff I'm hearing from these guys where they say, well, language does harm. It perpetuates harm, man. It's like, what the fuck are we talking about? You know, I mean, not to be rude, but it's like, what does that mean? You know, and I'll add one thing on the very end of it, which is this. Like, obviously, everyone can tell and understand context for the most part. I would never go up to Jordan and say, hey, N-word, like, screw you or whatever. You know, but when you do something that's like a little surprising or edgy and a joke,
I'd probably just fucking laugh.
And there you go. You know,
when he said it, it was fucking hilarious. I know it's like mean to some people, but it's funny though.
Yeah, so it's like people got to lighten up a little bit. And that's actually, by the way, the basis of understanding. Because if you go to a black person or a person of another race and joke about the differences and not take offense, that's actually the basis of solidarity. There's like a lot of Southerners that hate me because I make fun of white Southerners and their culture. But, you know, the ones I get along with are the ones that make fun of me for being Mexican or for being Italian. They say I'm wearing a sombrero. They, oh, your last name's Fuentes, blah, blah. You know, and that's fun. That's funny. And people say this before. It's like in the 90s when there was racial humor, there's actually like more racial solidarity because people weren't at each other's throats looking to take offense. And that cuts both ways. I actually think these days, and I'll get shit for saying this, but I think these days even white people are starting to do this thing where they say, oh, is it because I'm white? Oh, and like, now there is a certain category of people that are fellow travelers with me that will take offense at everything said about white people. And I think everybody should just sort of relax and, you know, be able to distinguish a joke from a joke. And it's not to say that racial hatred, it doesn't exist or prejudice doesn't exist, but, you know, we should be able to laugh and make jokes and distinguish. That's all.
I agree. I 100% agree with that.
That joke was literally meant strictly for comedy. Like, it was not meant for anything except for, like, us to laugh about it. Because race should not be something that we take so fucking seriously all the time. Like, I get it. Like, there is a big difference. And if somebody walks up to you and calls you the hard R for absolutely no reason, okay, fight that motherfucker. But, like, if like me and Nick are joking and you, it's clearly like a clear rage bait, like just take it for what it is and just let him play it off. Like, obviously, if I took offense with it, I would be like, yo, Nick, like, what the fuck, bro? But, like, I don't, like, bro, I'm, if you know anything about me, man, I grew up in the Dave Chappelle era. If anything, I'm going to the Ku Klux Klan meeting with you because I'm trying to be the last motherfucker lynched. You know what I mean? That's the way that I look at it. I don't look at it in any other way besides that. And if anything, I don't want thugs in my area either. So I'm putting the hood on too. If I can get five with you, fuck it. Like, that's just what it is. Like, I don't take offense to, like, race like that. The more offense you take to race, the more you get to play that victim card.
It gives them more power. It gives the haters more power.
I grew up black. I knew I was a nigga since I was born. Like, there's no difference. I had the same opportunities that every other white person does. If I have more money than you or less money than you, I mean, we had the same opportunities. I'll be completely honest. If you're struggling as a white person, I feel sorry for you. If you're struggling as a black person, I feel sorry for you. If you're rich as a white man, shit, break me off. If you're rich as a black man, save your money, dog. Like, just trust me. Like, that's just how I operate, man. I don't take offense to this shit. And any white supremacist can come over and tell me some other shit. It doesn't matter.
All right, Harry.